So good morning, everybody. So as David has just introduced, my name is Mirko Albani. I work at the European Space Agency, and I will present here not only the CIDPS project, that is one that is the main target of the presentation, but also I will give a brief overview on what are the activities that we are doing at ESA for what concerns long-term data preservation. As you see, I work at ESA at the establishment Infrascadi that is mainly dealing with Earth observation activities. As I say, the presentation is mainly, first of all, the ESA activities, then the CIDPS project, and then in the last slide, I will give a brief overview on what is the future ESA LTTP program. So at ESA, I will not explain what is ESA. I think that everybody knows that we are dealing with space in several different domains, telecommunications, exploration of the universe, launchers, and many others. What I'm interested in where I work is the Earth observation domain. As you can see from the slide, we have, since the 70s, a lot of missions that are have been launched by ESA, and we provide also access through the EarthNet program to several data from missions that are not ESA missions, US missions, Japanese missions, and so on, and all these data are provided as access to European users. I will not go into the detail of each of these missions. Basically, I can say that we have now four Earth observation missions that are currently operational. We have a lot of many others to be launched in the upcoming years, also in the framework of the GMES program in cooperation with the European Commission. And this means that we are generating a huge amount of data that are useful for European users. Today, as I said, we started these activities in 77, so we have now reached something like 20 years of continuous measurements for some of our instruments, 30 years in some cases, and all these data are essential for an essential tool for science, and our long-term series of data are necessary and needed for several different applications in the different domains. And this is the only slide that I will present concerning the need. There is the need, of course, to preserve this data, and this is a fact. This is just to show some nice pictures, but what I want to say is that it is not only sufficient, and this was also discussed yesterday, to preserve the bytes, so the data. We need also to preserve also the knowledge that is associated to this data. For example, the quality of the data, the algorithms that we use to generate this data, and a lot of other information. And this is really fundamental in order to make sure that these data are understandable, not only today, but also in the future, and also by other communities than the Earth observation one. This is really a key aspect and a very important aspect that we are tackling today concerning the preservation of the knowledge. This is just an example of something that we discovered a few months ago. It's related to an unexpected result of the data that we have in our archives. ATSR is an instrument that is mainly used for measuring the sea surface temperature, and this is it's an instrument on an ESA satellite, and it is the main purpose in the utilization of these instruments in the last years. And what we discover is that we are using some auxiliary data to better calibrate the instruments and to make sure that the sea surface temperatures are well measured and are with the right accuracy. And using this auxiliary data, that are basically data used to support the primary measurement of the instruments, we have been able to, using this data as data themselves, we have been able to measure the geographical variation of the peak localization of the South Atlantic anomaly that was before in the South Atlantic Ocean and now is moving inside the continent in Brazil. This is a typical example of something that we had in our archives since 20 years, but we didn't know the kind of utilization that we could have done for this kind of data. The message here is that to know what is the knowledge associated to the data, it's something that is very difficult. So we have something in our hands today, but we do not know what we could do in the future with what we have in our hands today. Therefore, it's crucial and it's really important to preserve also all the knowledge that is associated to this data. The problem of preserving everything is that you have then an exponential growth of the volume of the archives, and this is what's happening not only at ESA today, but also in many other European agencies. The situation is that we have today something like 5 petabytes of data, but the increase is really exponential in the next years due to the launch of several Earth observation missions. So to tackle this, we are currently, we have a program for the initial period of 3 years, extended to 2012, where we are ensuring the preservation of all the archived data at ESA for Earth observation, and also ensuring and facilitating accessibility and exploitability of this data. And we are doing this as part of a cooperative approach with all the other European Earth observation data owners. So it's not something that ESA is doing by himself, but we are coordinating with all the other major space agencies in Europe and also worldwide to be sure that also their data are preserved systematically. In terms of implementation, we are implementing urgent activities at ESA because we had also some problems in preserving our data. And we are implementing activities also according to a set of guidelines and the content standard that we defined together with all the other European owners in the last years. This is very shortly the work plan. So we did several studies, implementation activities, evolution activities in our ESA archives. We have a coordination in Europe with that, and this is where SciDIP comes in the framework of the European coordination activities. The international context of LTDP is basically we have this framework that we are setting up together with the GSEB, is a ground sampling coordination body, is a body of space agencies in Europe. And together with this body, we are setting up this framework. We have links, of course, with the Alliance for Permanent Access through ESA membership. We are participating and we have links with all the other space agencies in the world through this Committee on Earth Observation Satellites. We have a link with the group on Earth Observation. It is a worldwide organization with more than 150 member states and participating organizations dealing with Earth science. And we have, of course, links with the standardization bodies. And last but not least, we have participated to several FP projects dealing with the technology research, network of excellences, and so on. And SciDIP is one of them and is the target of the next part of the presentation. So, as I said, SciDIP is a project that started in the 1st of September. It consists of 17 partners, and I am the coordinator of the project. It has a total budget of 7.7 million euros. And as you can see, it has several partners in the Earth Science domain, and the title is Science Data Infrastructure for Preservation Earth Science. So we are addressing preservation in general, but the main use case that we have in the project is Earth Science, and this is why we had several Earth Science partners in the consortium. This is basically what I already said. There is the need not only to preserve Earth Science data, but all the other data that are being generated today. We are in an era, and this comes from the high-level expert group report that was discussed yesterday, where we have a rising tide of data, and this is both an opportunity and a challenge for data owners. These are just examples of the utilization of long-term series of data that you can have. So I had present some example before, so I will not spend time on this. What is the context of SciDIP? Well, the need to preserve data has been expressed by several different communities in different domains, and as I say, Earth Science is a key example of a broad and heterogeneous and worldwide community. I have to mention that Earth Science data are very different in nature. We have different categories of data, different formats, different characteristics. So Earth Science is really very broad and very heterogeneous, and it's a community that is very active in the digital preservation domain. We have several projects that have been started in the past that have addressed digital data preservation and have produced visions, tools, prototype services. We have also infrastructure and standards that are related to digital data preservation that are available and are in place. So SciDIP is basically putting together all of this. So we are putting together in the same project the key users and provider communities in the Earth Science domain and also in other domains through the Alliance for Permanent Access. And we are including also the key technology partners from key technology projects that have been dealing and addressed in the past digital data preservation. CASPAR is just one of the examples. And we have unique links also with standardization bodies and broader communities, in particular in the Earth Science domain. So this is the heritage. What are the main objectives of the project? As I said, the project started just 2 months ago, so we are still in the initial phase. And basically, we want to deliver generic, sustained services for long-term preservation and usability as part of the data infrastructure for e-science, and we will have a longer presentation just after from David on this point. We will harmonize data preservation policies, approaches, and tools in the earth science domain. Today there are several approaches that are very scattered, very different. What we want to do is to try to have an harmonization of all of these in the earth science domain in order to all earth science data to be properly preserved with a common and consistent approach. And we will also demonstrate the services through advanced test beds. The approach is based on the high-level expert group vision, so we are really using this report as input. And we will address these points by working closely with real users. So the idea and the intention is to collect requirements from the users, to present the results that we obtain, to make the users testing the services and toolkits that we will develop. And we will ensure also the availability of an effective governance and maintenance of the services during the project, but also after the end of the project. So the idea is really to maintain these services in place after the end of the project. And also addressing disciplinary and cross-disciplinary strategy for metadata definition to ensure that the data are reused. So we need to ensure that the data that we are dealing with are understandable and can be used, are familiar, this is a word that David likes very much, also to other communities than the earth science, than science one. Basically, the action plan is based on a combination of a top-down data-centric point of view that is based on a proven design for generic infrastructure services for storage, access, and management, with a bottom-up user-centric view that is based on requirements, development, testing, and validation of the services, starting from the earth science community, but also in other communities, all within the framework of OIS. So the former approach, it comes from the evidence that these are the infrastructure components that and tools which are demanded for digital data preservation, and these are the results from the ParseInsight project, and that these are the services which do the job of preservation, and this is the result that comes from Caspar. The user-centric view comes from the requirement gathered across different disciplines and different scientific disciplines through the alliance, but also exploiting the Earth Observation Framework, LTDP framework that is being set up under ESA coordination. Here you can see that you have a cyclic approach where you start from the user requirement collection. We will develop some of the services, implement the services, make the user testing the services, perform some research to enhance and evolve the services, and then collect the feedback from the users. So this will be a cyclic approach that will be in place for 3 times during the project. I will not explain this. It's just to show that we have a lot of work packages. Things are quite complex. We have this is just the cyclic part that I wanted that I highlighted before. These are basically the services, and this will be the main target of the next presentation from David, so I will not go into the details of this, but basically these are the services and toolkits that we are going to develop in the project. And this is one part of the project. The other part is more related, and these are, as we said before, generic services, so that are usable both in the earth science domain, but also in non-earth science domains, so in the other domains. And then we have also a more focused earth science part that is more related to harmonization of policies, procedures, and metadata semantics, and so on. For what concerns dissemination, we will exploit the ESA LTDP program and all the links that we have with the earth science community for dissemination of the results in the earth science domain. And as I've shown before, in the international context, we are able to reach the worldwide earth science community. And for the other domains, we have the Alliance for Permanent Access that will allow us to reach all the other domains through app organizations and research projects. So, as a result, as a conclusion, SciDeep will provide, by the end of the project, generic, sustained, long-term data preservation services that have been tested, validated, and used in different domains, and in particular in the Earth Science one. It will have provide harmonized Earth Science data preservation policies, approaches, and architecture, and is basically a practical answer to one of the most challenging problems that we have today for the current digital era, which is in the Earth Science domain as basically its pathfinder. So that's all for what concerns the project. I just have one last slide on the ESA LTDP future program, and then I will give the word to David to go more in detail on the SciDPS project. As I said before, we have a preliminary Earth observation program for until the end of 2012, but we have already prepared a program proposal for the period beyond 2013 at ESA that will be presented at the end of 2012 to our delegations for approval as part of the ESA mandatory activity. At ESA we have optional programs and mandatory programs. We are proposing this LTDP as part of the activities that are mandatory for ESA. And the objective of this program is to guarantee the preservation, access, and exploitation of data and knowledge of all scientific data at ESA. So it's not anymore something that is addressing only Earth observation, but we are addressing all scientific data that we have generated at ESA from space-borne platforms. And this includes, for example, also scientific data from universe exploration and solar system exploration, international space stations, and so on. So this program is really something that is cross-domain, cross-disciplinary. It's not anymore Earth observation. It's all scientific data that we have at ESA. And this, of course, will enable to support ESA future programs, but also all other European activities and programs using this data. And this also will be done in cooperation and in coordination with the other space science data owners in Europe, aiming at coherently preserve not only ESA data, but also the data from all the other agencies and owners dealing with space data. So basically, this program is really an important milestone that we hope really that, of course, it will be approved, because this will allow to have this kind of coordination and this kind of activities from ESA and in Europe also with all the other stakeholders. And that's it. So I hope to have sticked to my time. And with this, I give the word to David that will go on with the more technical details on the SciDPS project.
Thank you. Yeah. I know you have to rush off. Yeah. So if you see Mirko dashing away, it's not that he doesn't like to hear me speaking, it's because he has to catch an airplane. So thank you very much, Mirko. So I'm going to just very quickly run over the technical aspects, but I think I'll just re-emphasize that the really interesting thing from my point of view is that there are a lot of users. There is, we believe, a real commitment from ESA to fund long-term digital preservation. And we're entering quite an exciting time in that respect. So preserving digital information, as we keep on saying, is an important issue, but its understandability and usability over the long term. And what we want to extend this is something that, in the way that Mirko hinted at, is that it's very difficult to get funding for digital preservation. So what we are doing, by the way, there was some sort of cost model that was developed to put to the ESA General Council, which may be of interest elsewhere. But what we want to do is to try to say that preservation is making things that become unfamiliar over time usable. But we can leverage that by saying, well, most things are unfamiliar. And so these sort of techniques should allow your data to be used in a much wider context. And I think that's an important concept that needs to be pushed. It's entirely consistent with the Riding the Wave report. And I think it will allow us to justify the expenditure on preservation. So what we're doing is based on OAIS. There is a poster outside, I think. But the important thing is the information model, which is quite simple, but it's this thing which is the really tricky thing to address. So it's how to keep, this is saying that in order to understand some bits, you need some extra information, but it may be that in order to understand that extra information, you need information about that. So that's a shorthand way of writing it. One important concept in OAIS is the archival information package, because that's the thing that allows one to say, yes, we've got everything we need for long-term preservation, including the representation information and all of the provenance and PDI information that's important for authenticity, which is in turn important for trust and so forth. So you will probably gather as I talk that the two projects, Parson and CITEPS, are very closely linked, because the concepts from one, as they are pulled together in Parson, will feed into CITEPS. The two projects finish about the same time. So this builds on the important work from Parson Insight. This is an old diagram, but it shows the different colors are different disciplines. It shows the geographical spread of the inputs. And we use some interesting tricks to get this broader spread of inputs. So what we have are a very good representation across the world, I think, mostly in Europe, but an awful lot in the US. And we've got the numbers, so we can start to say, well, can we pick out the mathematicians on the west coast of the US and compare them, what they think, to the historians in Germany? And the interesting thing is that when you do that, you get some rather interesting, consistent results across the board. So everybody has lots of different sorts of data. They obviously have lots of documents, but they've got all of these other things as well. Of course, one of the underlying threads through these discussions is the data accessible as well as understandable? And the answer from these surveys is, again, remarkably consistently, it isn't. Only about a quarter say that their data is openly available for everybody. When you ask why, then the answer, the two major issues are misuse. Now, there are various things that could encompass, but one of the things is not understanding it properly, and the other is legal issues. So those were two of the main factors preventing people from sharing. Again, this has been reported some time ago, but it's important to bear that in mind, because the other thing that came out very strongly from Parson Insight are the threats that people recognize to digital preservation. Now, these are the threats that that Ash Hunter was talking about in the scenarios and the testing environments. So these are the things we need to be sure to guard against. Now, I'm not going to go through them in detail, but it's just to say that when you look at the breakdown, here's the 50% mark, and you see that very important and important, all of these threats are regarded as important or very important. And when you look at each of these questions and by discipline, you see, again, a remarkable consistency. Some, the humanities have regard this particular threat as much more important in many ways than the other disciplines, but there is this remarkable consistency across countries, across disciplines. And again, when you have surveys with a few hundred responses, the error bars, you should put on are quite large. Whereas we've got an awful lot more responses in the Parson Insight survey, and that can allow us to draw these interesting conclusions. So, we've got, a positive evidence base about the threats. Then what works? Now, in CASPAR, we developed a number of tools. I'm not going to go into it. Into it in detail, but we tested these tools against these threats in many different disciplines, and we collected together what I think is quite an impressive body of documentation to prove that these particular techniques, and as Ash said, we were mostly focused on representation information, but including emulation and so forth, and also legal aspects. And there is this body of evidence to support what we believe about these tools. Now, if you bring these together, we can start talking about infrastructures. And picking up what Costas said, I mean, what one generally sees at the lowest level is islands of capability, and to connect them, you put something in place. In this case, géant. Sorry, you can't read that. But then on top of that, there's the storage, compute resources you put in place, the various grid infrastructures. And we're moving up to repositories, and again, there are components being put in place by many of the other EU projects that allow that sort of bridging the gap between islands. But when you go to the future, you'll have similar sorts of repositories and similar stacks implemented in different ways. But what we have to do in order to bridge the gap is to counter these threats. But those sorts of services also aid in the interoperability, as I was saying, because between one repository and another, or between users and different repositories, the contents of those repositories are essentially unfamiliar. So what we need and what we were aiming at inside it are services that were not centralized. So we're not saying we're the center of everything, with no single point of failure. But more importantly, what we cannot tell repositories is they have to throw away everything and use our stuff, because that just will not fly and it's just not sensible. So what we want to do is to give people something that will enable them to improve their capabilities. And indeed, when we did the test audits, which I'll report on later, these were common things through all the repositories we've looked at. And I may be biased, okay, so, but we'll test these things. But I believe the services we're talking about can really improve the certifiability, if I can put it that way, of the repositories. And very importantly, a final requirement was that these services themselves must be maintainable after the funding from CIDPS. So we've been quite careful in the design of these things. I'm not going to go through this in detail, but if you compare these icons to the ones used in Caspar, they're very, very similar. What we've done is to take, or what we'll be doing is to take the prototypes that we had in Caspar. We're obviously going to throw away the exact implementations, but we've worked through the ideas, we've defined what we need to do, and we'll be re-implementing them as they say, robust and scalable, and supplementing them by a number of toolkits to create representation information, to create the authenticity. And again, we'll be picking up ideas from APARS and many other projects. So what we then can say is, if you take the threats from APARS Insight, you can then think in general terms about the way to counter the threats. And then I would argue that there is a very clear mapping to the services that CIDPS is producing. So these are things, most of these things have been proved to be effective in Caspar. They're countering these threats. And so we have pretty good confidence that we're headed in the right direction. So this is just to show an example of how these things might be distributed around in this case, Europe, but also that many of these capabilities will be duplicated or will be in multiple locations around Europe and indeed the world. The role of the Alliance is to act as a sort of guarantor exchange server. So it's not going to be hit millions of times a day, but it will be there in the background to ensure that the services continue on. So in summary, I believe that we've demonstrated in other projects the demand for the services, the effectiveness across domains. We've shown, I think, that the how these services can help repositories without disturbing their setup and should be maintainable. So I'll stop there, and please ask me about this in the over lunch and in the various breaks. But I am going to rush on now because I've cut a little bit into the time.